It is Friday, the 15th of February, and this is Kathy bringing you the Rantoul Press for this week. Starting with a headline today, 7 years in juvenile prison for 14-year-old who stole guns from Rural King by Mary Schenck. A third young man from Rantoul who admitted he stole guns from a Rantoul store has been sentenced to 7 years in juvenile prison. Despite the 14-year-old's declaration that he was ready to change, Judge Heidi Ladd said he hadn't done enough in the past few months to prove that. The youth pleaded guilty in early January to possession of a stolen firearm, admitting that he had guns that were stolen during a November 21st burglary at the Rantoul Rural King at 1700 East Grove Avenue. The 15-year-old with him and an adult, Henry Boykins, 24, also of Rantoul, each received the same sentence. The other teen pleaded guilty to the same crime before Ladd and was sentenced in early January. Judge Tom DeFontis accepted Boykins' guilty pleas last week to the burglary of the Rantoul Rural King and the burglary that same day of the Rural King at 913 West Market View Drive in Champaign. The trio got in the Champaign store but left without guns when they heard voices and ran. They then headed to Rantoul, where they were successful at stealing two long guns off a display rack before leaving in a vehicle that had been stolen earlier that day in Rantoul. They were caught as they left Rantoul in the stolen vehicle. The youth sentenced Thursday was on parole for an aggravated battery adjudication at the time of his arrest for gun theft. His mother testified that she planned to move to a new community with him to give him a fresh start. "He has told me so many times he does not want this life," she told the judge. Assistant State's Attorney Sarah Perry recommended a prison sentence, while public defender Janie Miller-Jones urged the judge to consider probation, calling it a much better use of resources for the youth. "He is not a lost cause. He is 14," Miller-Jones said. Ladd agreed that the boy had potential, but had done little to demonstrate that, citing problems he had while in the juvenile detention center as recently as last month. Those included arguing with staff, flooding his room, making sexually inappropriate comments, and getting in a fight with another youth that resulted in a pregnant JDC staff member being hit in the abdomen. Ladd said the trio's plan to steal guns was premeditated and constituted a recipe for disaster. Ladd applauded his mother's efforts but observed, "He's making his own choices at this point." The teen cannot be held in the Department of Juvenile Justice past his 21st birthday, and with good behavior is likely to be released much sooner. And that is the end of that article. And this article, the headline, Coroner's Jury Rules Ford County Death a Homicide by Gene Walsh. Ford County authorities will continue to investigate last May's death of an Elliott man after a coroner's jury ruled it was a homicide. "We have people to talk to and more work to be done," says Sheriff Mark Doran. A jury of three men and three women deliberated for about 1.5 hours before reaching its verdict around 10:50 p.m. Wednesday, finding that the cause of death of Jeremy C. Turner, 34, was a gunshot wound to the head and that the matter of death was homicidal. Mr. Turner's widow, Dinah Turner, teared up after the findings were announced by Coroner Rick Flesner. "I knew he didn't do this to himself," she said. "I pray to find out who did this and find justice." Mr. Turner was found dead alone in his home at 202 East Railroad Street in Elliott on May 8, 2018, after firefighters from four agencies were called there to extinguish a major fire that had engulfed it. While an autopsy showed that soot was present in Mr. Turner's airways, indicating he was alive at the time of the fire, it was determined that the official cause of death was a gunshot wound to the head. Flesner said that Dr. Shiping Bao, the pathologist who performed the autopsy, found that Mr. Turner suffered a bullet wound that entered the left side and exited the right side of his head. The bullet wound was not immediately apparent, however, even on radiological examination, due to the body's badly burned condition. The wounds were found only after Bao excised the scalp to examine the brain. Mysteriously, a semi-automatic pistol that Mr. Turner reportedly kept loaded in the side of his recliner, as well as an estimated 11 to 13 other guns kept in the household, were removed on the night of Mr. Turner's death by a man purporting to be a family friend. The man told police he removed the guns at the request of Mr. Turner's widow, an assertion she strongly denied. Dinah Turner said she had not spoken to the man in 5 to 6 years. When the man brought the pistol to the sheriff on the day following Mr. Turner's death, police found it strange that the gun had been taken apart and cleaned. Ford County Sheriff's Lieutenant Pat Duffy said that once the gunshot wound was discovered in Mr. Turner's head during the autopsy, investigators began looking for the pistol in photographs of the fire scene taken by Shane Arndt, a certified inspector and special agent with the Office of the Illinois State Fire Marshal. In one photo, investigators found the pistol's muzzle to be facing backward and placed pointing down in the right side of the recliner where Mr. Turner's body was found. The gun's location placed it near Mr. Turner's right side. Tuffy said a total of 5 shells were eventually recovered from the scene, although only 4 were initially found. Duffy said those who arrived first at the scene reported hearing some pops from inside the house that they thought might have been ammunition cooking off from the heat of the fire. However, Duffy emphatically stated that the 5 pistol rounds did not cook off, they were fired. Duffy explained that was clear because of the striations found on the spent casings. Those striations were formally tested and found to be a match to Mr. Turner's pistol. Duffy said witnesses in the area reported seeing no vehicles present before the fire or leaving the scene afterwards. When asked if Mr. Turner could have had enemies, Dinah Turner said the various medications he kept on hand to control his various diseases could be the only reason she could think of what might cause someone to want to harm him. According to Bow, Mr. Turner had chronic conditions of Huntington's disease, multiple sclerosis, and emphysema. Flessner read notes from Mr. Turner's personal physician, internist Dr. Omageda of Gibson City, indicated that Mr. Turner was a heavy tobacco user, had a history of alcohol and caffeine use, and was a medical marijuana user. Dinah Turner said that while her husband kept a loaded revolver in the side of his recliner, there was never a bullet in the chamber. She also noted that her husband would be unable to rack a bullet into the chamber on his own due to his right hand being mostly useless to him and the severe shaking the diseases caused in him. The pistol noticeably was found near Mr. Turner's right side, the same side that Dinah Turner testified he had little use of. Mr. Turner was right-handed, she said. Dinah Turner noted that when her husband tried to fire the pistol, the recoil caused him to smack his forehead. She said he had little control of it because he shook uncontrollably. Due to his condition, she said she had to assist him with most basic activities of daily living. Dinah Turner testified that her husband could have picked up the pistol with one hand, but positively could not have fired it without using both hands. Jurors asked about the weight of the weapon, and Duran provided a similar weapon for them to examine. 2 female jurors held it and found it surprisingly heavy. Dinah testified to the couple's loving and close relationship. She also described Mr. Turner's daily routine of being mostly in a recliner and watching television. She said he used a wheelchair to let the couple's 2 dogs out or to go to the kitchen for snacks as needed. Things were great, she testified. We were happy. She described happy outings with friends during the weekend before his death. Killian asked Dinah Turner whether her husband suffered mood swings or depression that can be related to Huntington's disease. She characterized his only negative emotion as being angry if he fell. Dinah Turner also described the home's layout, indicating there were 3 entrances into the home. The deck exit had a wheelchair ramp. She also said that Mr. Turner had a window next to the recliner chair. My husband would have thrown himself out a window to get to me, Dinah Turner said of his potential escape, if the fire was accidental. He was a fighter. Jim Cook, a 20-year-old friend of Mr. Turner, said the last time he saw Mr. Turner was about 2 weeks before his death. He said Mr. Turner was happy and the 2 went shooting. Mr. Turner was in a wheelchair and had to be assisted to hold up his gun. He couldn't hit anything, but he was having a good time doing it, Cook said, in describing the pair's outing at Cook's property in Melvin. Arndt determined the area of origin of the fire was the dining room area at floor level. However, Arndt said he was unable to locate an exact point of origin, which he said is a common problem in fire investigations. Mr. Turner's recliner was located in the northwest part of the living room, near the interior doorway between the living room and the dining room. Arndt said that due to the house being older, the framing allowed the fire to quickly travel to the second floor and the attic once it was in the home's walls. Flessner said he declared the time of Mr. Turner's death to be 11 a.m. The time he arrived at the scene, Arndt said Mr. Turner's body had been removed by firefighters before he arrived there. A toxicology report provided by NMS Labs of Willow Springs, Pennsylvania, showed cafetine, nicotine, and cannabinoids were present in Mr. Turner's body. And that's the end of that article. State Representative Marin, Village Trustee in Hall, set coffee conversation for this Saturday. State Representative Mike Marin, Republican of Fithian, and Rantoul Village Trustee Sam Hall will host a coffee and conversation time from 10 to 11 a.m. this Saturday, February 16th, at the Rantoul Public Library. Hall said the public is welcome to attend and discuss whatever is on your mind and to provide ideas and keep initiatives flowing. For more information, you can email Marin at mike@repmarin.com, or you can call him at 477-0104. County Executive sets two lunches in Rantoul. New Champaign County Executive Darlene Kleppel has scheduled two community conversation lunches in Rantoul in the coming months to meet with residents. They are set for Wednesday, March 20th at TK Cheese Steaks at 112 East Congress, and Wednesday, June 19th at the Red Wheel, 741 Broad Meadow. Both stops will last from noon to 1 p.m. To reserve a seat at the table, contact Tammy Asplund at 384-3776 or by email at Tasplund, that's T-A-S-P-L-U-N-D, at co.champaign.il.us. Former Rantoul man dead after abduction and car chase in Missouri. Authorities said two people, including a man who formerly lived in Champaign and Rantoul, are dead following a kidnapping, attempted carjacking, and lengthy police chase that started in Missouri and ended in southern Illinois. Police said that Leslie Austin, 39, kidnapped his girlfriend and their child Tuesday night in Jefferson City, Missouri. They said the woman was shot during the abduction but survived. Police said she was able to escape with her child after Austin drove into Illinois, where he then fatally shot a 67-year-old man during an attempted carjacking. The St. Louis Post-Dispatch reported that Austin died after exchanging gunfire with police, who stopped his vehicle using stop sticks along a road in Greenville, Illinois, about halfway between St. Louis and Effingham, along Interstate 70. It wasn't immediately known if Mr. Austin shot himself or was shot by officers. Police said the woman was being treated at a hospital Wednesday. Her condition has not been released. Champaign County court records show that Mr. Austin listed a Rantoul address between 2000 and 2008 and a Champaign address between 2008 and 2014. Man admits to sexual abuse by Mary Schenck. A Rantoul man who pleaded guilty to inappropriately touching a teen after being found with her in the back seat of a van has been provisionally sentenced to 4 years of probation. Ronell Throw, 21, who listed an address in the 400 block of Marco Drive, pleaded guilty Tuesday before Judge Roger Weber to aggravated criminal sexual abuse. Throw was arrested December 12th after a deputy on patrol found him in the back seat of a van with a 13-year-old girl. The deputy said he had stopped to see if the people in the van, parked north of Urbana, not far from the intersection of Leverett and Martin Roads, needed help. Throw and the girl talked to the deputy separately. Throw admitted touching her for his own sexual gratification. Weber ordered Throw to cooperate with a sex offender evaluation and, depending on its outcome, will confirm his sentence on March 29th. I'll go ahead and go to the obituaries. We want to make sure we get all those in. This first one is for Virginia Ashworth. Virginia Ashworth, 86, of Villa Grove, mother of two Fisher residents, died Sunday, February 10th, 2019. Services will be at 11 a.m. Wednesday, February 13th, at Joynes Funeral Home in Villa Grove. The Reverend Bill Harry will officiate. Burial will be in Villa Grove Cemetery. Visitation was 1 hour before the services. James Bergen. James E. Bergen, 60, of Fisher, died Monday, February 11th, at home. Funeral services will be at noon, Saturday, February 16th, at the Calvert and Martin Funeral Home, 206 North Maple Street in Cullum. Burial will be in Broughton Township Cemetery. Visitation was from 4 to 7 p.m. on Thursday at the Heath and Vaughn Funeral Home in Champaign, and will also be at 11 a.m. tomorrow, Saturday, at the Calvert and Martin Funeral Home in Cullum. Joanne DeVille, or Deauville, 71, of Urbana, mother of a Rantoul woman, died at 10 a.m. Saturday, February 9th, at Carle Foundation Hospital. A memorial visitation was held from 5 to 7 p.m. Wednesday, February 13th, at Renner Wyckoff Chapel and Crematory in Urbana. Doris Eamon. Doris C. Eamon, 91, of Paxton, died at 9:30 p.m. Monday, February 11th, at home. Funeral services will be at 2 p.m. Saturday, February 16th, at the First Lutheran Church, 301 South College in Paxton, with the Reverend Deborah Domeyer officiating. Burial will follow in the Pine Ridge Cemetery in Loda. Visitation will be from noon to 2 p.m. Saturday at the church. Ellen Ellis. Ellen M. Ellis, 95, of Gifford, died in the early morning hours of Friday, February 8th, at Country Health Care and Rehab in Gifford. Services will be held at a later date. Ivan or Yvonne Fender. Ivan F. Fender, 89, of Paxton, died at 5:20 p.m. Monday, February 11th, at Accolade Health Care on Pells in Paxton. Funeral services are today at 1 p.m., February 15th, at the Bayer Family Funeral Services, 406 East Pell Street in Paxton, with Dan Hill officiating. Burial will follow in Glen Cemetery, Paxton, with military honors by Paxton American Legion Prairie Post 150. Visitation is today, noon to 1 p.m. at the funeral home. Renee Helpingstein. Renee D. Helpingstein, 52, of Fisher and formerly of the Zion Hill area, died February 10th at Carle Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Her loving family were at her side. Funeral services will be at 1 p.m. Saturday at the First Baptist Church in Salem, with Pastor Rich Gregory officiating. Burial will follow at Zion Hill Cemetery in rural Centralia, Illinois. Visiting hours will be from 10:30 a.m. until the service hour at the church on Saturday. Esther Hethke. Esther M. Hethke, 79, of Fisher, died Saturday morning, February 9th, at OSF Heart of Mary Medical Center in Urbana. Funeral services will be at 10 a.m. Saturday, February 16th, at the River Valley Church in Fisher. The Reverend Andy Baker will officiate. Burial will be at 1 p.m. Saturday in the Ridgeland Township Cemetery in Thawville. Visitation is from 5 to 7 p.m. today, Friday, at the Lux Memorial Chapel on Grove Avenue in Rantoul. Virginia Stever. Virginia M. Stever, 98, who with her husband was a longtime operator of a Rantoul drive-in, died Wednesday, February 6th at the Bueller Home in Peoria, with her son Sean by her side. Funeral services were at will be at 11 a.m. Friday, February 22nd, at Wilton Mortuary, 2101 North Knoxville Avenue in Peoria. The Reverend Dr. Randy Williams will officiate, and burial will follow in the Swan Lake Cemetery. Visitation will be from 5 to 8 p.m. Thursday, February 21st, and 10 a.m. Friday, February 22nd, at the mortuary. Otis Noble, Jr. Otis Noble, Jr., 71, son of Ruby Wheeler and Otis Noble of Chicago, made his transition to the Lord on February 5th, 2019. Services were held on February 11th, 2019, at Salem Missionary Baptist Church. Otis was laid to rest by the military at the Danville National Cemetery. And now, returning to some more local news. Potomac School Chief named to head Oakwood District. Potomac Grade School Superintendent Principal Larry Maynard will be leaving to take the superintendent's job at Oakwood. The Oakwood School Board on Monday approved a 3-year contract with Larry Maynard to serve as superintendent. Maynard, Potomac Grade School Superintendent and Principal for the last 1.5 years, will start his new assignment July 1st. His salary was set at $115,000 for the first year. Maynard will succeed Gary Lewis, who will be sworn in as the Regional Superintendent of Schools for Champaign and Ford Counties July 1st. Lewis has been an educator for 22 years and an administrator for 19 of them. He has led the Oakwood District since 2015. The district launched a search for Lewis's successor at the end of October. It received 14 applications, conducted interviews with 4 candidates, and then narrowed down to 2 finalists. Maynard is also a veteran educator. A Dwight High School alumnus, Maynard earned and studied education and played football at Joliet Junior College and Millikan University. He earned a master's degree in sports administration from Illinois State University and later a master's in education administration from Eastern Illinois University. He earned his superintendency endorsements from Eastern in 2014. After graduating from Millikan, Maynard was a graduate assistant at Illinois Wesleyan University, where he coached football and track. While working on his first master's degree, he was hired to teach and coach at Normal Community High School. Later, he served as head football coach and dean of students at Eureka High School, a teacher and head football coach at Paxton Buckley Loda High School, and a teacher and a football and track coach at Rantoul Township High School. While earning his second master's, he was hired as principal at Judah Christian School. He then returned to Rantoul Township High School as dean of students and assistant principal for 3 years, then served as principal of Hoopston Area High School for 10 years. Maynard left Hoopston to lead Potomac in 2017. Lewis said Maynard will be a great fit for Oakwood and has enough experience that can come in so that he can come in and take over without any problem. That said, Lewis said he's looking forward to working side by side with Maynard on some matters that will affect the coming school year before he leaves. Village Board likely to approve vacant property purchase program by Dave Hinton. The Village Board was expected to approve adoption of a pilot version of the vacant property purchase program at Tuesday night's monthly board meeting. 7 properties would be included in the initial offering for sale. They include 114, 1136, and 1130 Clark Street, 1600 Ader Avenue, 1300 and 1361 Fairlawn Drive, and 516 North Penfield Street. Village Trustee Sam Hall said the 2 changes have been made to the ordinance as outlined in January. If the buyer of the property opts to sell it within 5 years, he or she would face a fine of $500 or fair market value of the land, whichever is higher. The original fine was $1,000. Also, if a fine is assessed, the seller has the option to appeal the fine to the village administrator. Residents living next to a parcel would have first option to buy it for $100. The lots may be used to expand the yards of existing homes for beautification, for gardens, for housing, or other uses. Up to 2 lots can be purchased per application. Applicants will be given 60 days from approval date to finalize the purchase. Applicants must be current on property taxes and have no financial obligations to the village of Rantoul. After 30 days, if no property owner living adjacent to the parcel that is for sale steps forward to buy the property, it will be made available to other residents of Rantoul for a minimum of $250 per parcel. If 2 adjacent property owners, for example, bid to buy a parcel, it can be split in half, and the cost will be $50 per half parcel. If approved by the Village Board at the February meeting, the resolution and map of available parcels will be placed on the Village website. The open application process for adjacent property owners will begin March 1st. On April 1st, the open application process will begin for non-adjacent residents. A review of property will take place July 1st to see which village-owned property should be added to the list. Also, there will be a review of the process to determine the need for any changes to the program. Zoning and annexation proposals. The board was also asked to approve 2 zoning and 1 annexation proposal. KTRM LLC requested a change in zoning from R1, which is single-family residential, to R4, multifamily residential, for the 4 adjoining parcels at 334, 346, 356, and 358 North Drive. As a result of the changes, 2 existing duplexes located on a single lot would be brought into conformance with the village zoning ordinance, and 2 vacant lots would match the zoning found on 3 sides of the properties. Adams Outdoor Advertising requested parcels of land locating at 612 and 614 and 628 Liberty Avenue that hold billboards on the curve along South US 45 be annexed into the village. The company is also asking that those properties be rezoned from Champaign County AG2, which is agriculture, to the village I1, which is industrial. Both the zoning requests and the annexation request were recommended by the Village Planning and Zoning Commission and staff. A change in appointing lieutenants. Police Chief Tony Brown asked the board to amend village code regarding the appointment of lieutenants within the police department. He asked that lieutenants be removed from jurisdiction of the Police and Fire Commission and be placed under the procedures code for most employees of the village, and that lieutenants be appointed from among full-time sergeants within the department. Brown also asked that the village code regarding disposal of unclaimed property be amended. The police department houses a wide variety of property, from evidence to lost and abandoned property to property left for safekeeping, Brown said. The new procedures would include a process for notification of owners and timelines for property to be claimed before it is disposed of. Benefit Services Provider Contract. Village Administrator Scott Eisenhower asked the board to approve the selection of Esser Hayes CIBC Champaign as the village's benefit services provider at a cost of $18,000. The company will provide medical, group Medicare, dental, life, voluntary life, long-term disability, and vision brokerage services. It will also provide information on technology that the village staff will be able to use and tools to assist with budgeting. Parade route closure. The board was asked to approve a resolution regarding the annual temporary closing of U.S. 136 for the 4th of July parade from North Maplewood Drive to East Grove Avenue and from Frederick Street to Wabash Avenue. And that was written by Dave Hinton. And from Thomasboro, outsourcing not a permanent solution for Thomasboro water. A contract with Illinois American Water Company would be a stopgap solution to Thomasboro's water management dilemma, the village board learned at a continued meeting on Friday. Would I sign a contract for 20 years with you? No. Two maybe, said Dave Farrar, manager of operations for Illinois American Water. We only operate these operations and management contracts for short periods of time. It's usually a business development contract. Trustee Dustin Rhodes responded, "So this is a stepping stone into complete purchase," he said. The board has been clear all along it's not interested in selling the water treatment plant, and Mayor Tyler Evans said it again during the meeting. One question the trustees had raised at previous meetings was the possibility of hiring a full-time or a part-time employee who could work under Illinois American Water licensing while obtaining his own water operator's license. Farrar couldn't give a definitive answer due to the company's contract with Utilities Workers Union of America. There's no language in the UWUA contract to do that, Farrar said. It's not that I can't ask if we could do it, but we don't have the language in there. Complicating the matter is uncertainty about the stance the Illinois Environmental Protection Agency will take in the future regarding training under another water operator's license. Farrar said the EPA started looking into such arrangements last year over concerns about lax supervision. They're looking into those guys that just go around to sign the paperwork. They want to eliminate that, Farrar said. Farrar suggested the board consider hiring a consultant. He said he began his career working at the Fisher Water Treatment Plant and eventually left due to a similar scenario. You guys are in a very hard situation trying to make a decision for the village for the next 50 to 100 years. You might be wise to use one of these consultants. It's a little bit of money, but they'll be able to provide you some neutral advice that's not me, he said. But as Rhodes pointed out, that would be an additional delay. The village has been without a public works supervisor since December 31st. Former public works supervisor Tyler Martin is providing minimum water operations in the interim. Trustees Rhonda Scott, John Curry, and Kyle Henniger seem to be leaning toward a contract with Illinois American Water. Scott pointed out the benefits of not having to work, having to worry about covering vacation or sick time and not having someone to show up to work, and said she is interested in an 18-month contract. Just to have someone knowledgeable coming here to check our water treatment makes me feel good, she said. The board is faced with two fundamental questions: the number of hours required to cover water and wastewater needs, and how to find and retain a full-time or part-time employee qualified or willing to earn qualification to fill such a position. Evans said contracting with the Illinois American Water may provide the data to answer the first question. So what's the game plan? When do we vote? Farrar said he could likely have a contract for the board within 5 to 10 days. And that's all we have time for today. You have a great weekend. This is Kathy. I enjoy reading with you. Bye-bye.